Hello and welcome to the A Perspective with me, Andrew Skipper. I'm head of the Africa practice for international law firm Hogan Lovells, and I'm also a member of the UK government's Africa Investors Group. I'm passionate about doing business in Africa and providing legal support for companies who are invested in the continent's future. Through these podcasts, I'll be exploring how business and governments are working together in Africa, particularly as we navigate our way through the COVID-19 pandemic. One of the key issues faced is now how to address the mountain of debt in a post-COVID world and stabilize sovereign balance sheets to allow for growth at least in the medium term, and all this in the context of a competitive market for investment globally. My guest today is Ed Marlowe of Credit Suisse. Ed is head of the Sub-Saharan Africa coverage and sales at the Global Wealth Manager and Investment Bank. He has extensive experience in Africa, both as a businessman and a financier. And Ed now joins me from London. Hi, Ed. It's great to have you with me.
Hi, Andrew. And good to be with you, too.
Ed, now you're a banker, but also I think, a former British Army officer, and you run a mine in DRC. So there's nobody better to cope in a crisis. Are you finding your background has equipped you better for the war on COVID-19 compared with your financial training?
I've certainly learned some patience over the course of my long and different careers, but yeah, I think so. I mean, in a sense, I can put things in a slightly different perspective because in the past I've seen, you know, all sorts of major destroyed economies, destroyed countries. I don't necessarily seeing that just now, but I think you can also see the recovery of those, some of the places that I've seen in the past. So, I remain optimistic. I mean, I look at Sub-Saharan Africa who are, to some degree, suffering the economic whirlwind of what the rest of us are doing, perhaps, in the Western world. Are going to have major issues in their economies, differing ones, depending on the different countries we look at. But issues that will, I would imagine, take several years, if not more, to actually work out and get them on the right track again.
Yeah, and do you think that this African sovereign debt's been under pressure for a long time with the borrowings, dollar-denominated debts, oil price wars? Is this simply bringing to a head a whole range of problems, just focusing and catalyzing some of the problems which have been there for a long time?
There's no question. I mean, I think you slightly referred to the G20 sort of yes. Statement about certainly a debt moratorium of some form or another. I mean, not cancellation, I don't think. But there's no question that that is something that people should certainly be looking towards. I mean, in the same way as we're in the West and we can print hard currency, essentially, so we can perhaps fund over the very long term, I suspect, many of the issues we're now facing with lockdowns, et cetera, but in Sub-Saharan Africa, they can't really do that. So I think that we, therefore, need to be prepared to work in ways to assist that debt moratorium and look at ways that we can help to provide. And it will, in our particular circumstances, I suspect it will be alongside DFIs and organizations like the World Bank, like IMF, like African Development Bank, African Action Bank, etc. But working alongside them to actually provide the short-term financing that countries need, that sovereigns need. I mean, the euro bond market undoubtedly is going to be closed for some time, I suspect.
Yeah.
The ordinary bilateral loans that we would conventionally be doing for countries are not going to be particularly easy, let's put it like that, for certainly the next 6 months. I mean, it could be quite a lot longer than that. So therefore, it's getting that short-term financing in that countries need, which we have to be prepared for. And I think we want to be prepared for. I mean, any major financial institution should see now the opportunity to actually assist in helping countries sort of ride this particular problem.
So a bank like Credit Suisse is up for that, is it? Working with government and the DFIs, multilaterals?
I believe so. I think that's certainly, as part of our global responsibility, that is something we should do. We are obviously a major lender to Sub-Saharan Africa anyway.
Yeah.
And everything we've done in the past has been related to sort of infrastructure, essentially, or to something that's developmental. If it's developing infrastructure, in a sense, it's sort of helping an economy to diversify. And we're pretty careful as to, where the lending goes. So we've always been conscious of that. And we are, for the same reason, I think, in this short-term period, and let's hope in the short-term period, wanting to provide some form of financing alongside others, and it will be alongside others, that I'm fairly certain.
Yeah, so the The African Union was in their recent document was calling for a paradigm shift in the approach taken to Africa and by Africa. And they were talking about not only restructuring debt, but even what they, in quotes, an ambitious plan for the cancellation of total African external debt. How realistic is that, do you think?
Well, I don't necessarily want to comment on that. I don't think it is particularly realistic. If the rest of the world wants to forgive African debt, at a sovereign level, sort of that's up to the rest of the world at a sovereign level. But I think for commercial lenders, I mean, bearing in mind, you know, Africa will come through this. I will want to borrow again. It's a complicated thing to cancel debt. I don't doubt restructuring is possible. I don't doubt moratoriums are possible. But I think the cancellation of debt, I don't think is the right answer.
Okay, and I fully understand why that would be said. But you don't think that just postponing debt is kicking the can down the road while we wait for a financial solution?
Well, it depends how it's postponed and whether the interest payment is covered. I mean, the IMF I've seen have already provided some support for interest payments. Mm. So, I mean, whether that is a matter of the World Bank IMF, I don't know. I mean, I would think so, to be honest. Restructuring is always something that's possible. Most lenders will at some point be willing to entertain restructuring for other reasons. If not, then this is, you know, a particularly good one, I would think. But bearing in mind, most African debt is owned by not necessarily the financial institutions like ours. It's distributed down. It's owned by other investors. So it's a complicated thing to manage, and it's a slightly risky thing to throw around things like cancellation of debt, I think. It's not necessarily good for sub-Saharan Africa to do that.
No, understood. But so tell me why you're optimistic, because I was listening to and you may have heard it yourself, a webinar by the well-known Dr. Doom, Nouriel Roubini, who said there are a trifecta of unsuppressed pandemic, insufficient economic policy, and massive geopolitical friction was going to lead to depression and civil unrest. You sound a little bit more optimistic than that. How do you counter those arguments with what you and others might be capable of doing with Africa?
The coronavirus is one of many things that affects Africa, sub-Saharan Africa. I mean, there are many other illnesses, of course, that are actually prevalent, you know, TB, malaria, et cetera, which have major effects. Predominantly essentially a much younger population than, say, Europe or indeed America. There isn't the health services that we have in the West or expect in the West to possibly even get inundated. I mean, they will get inundated, but... And the issue is in sub-Saharan Africa, I don't know the exact number, but let's say 80 to 90% of the population across sub-Saharan Africa are in the informal economy. I mean, they're not, regular wage earners, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So they are people who have to get out of bed and go to work every day just to earn enough to live.
So just shutting down is not really an option.
Shutting down is not really an option. And I also don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, we see all the statistics out there as to the effects of coronavirus here in the UK or indeed the rest of Europe or America. I don't know how that necessarily applies in sub-Saharan Africa. And I think, you know, many African countries have actually got expertise in locking down things in a sense and managing, you know, whether it's Ebola virus or other things. And they've shut their borders, obviously. I mean, you know, there's a limit to the amount of travel. The issue is obviously in the very dense sort of urban areas where things will spread. Now, I just don't know what sort of damaging sort of effects that might have across a relatively young population. I mean, it's reasonably healthy, actually, I would say. So it may not have the same impact we see here, but the economic impact as a result of everything we're doing here, and we didn't mention the fall in the price of oil for several reasons. It wasn't just because of the lack of demand, but essentially that is what really drives it now.
Yes.
That economic effect on many sub-Saharan African countries is going to be pretty severe.
I assume Nigeria is one of the most affected there and, you know, pretty much the biggest country in sub-Saharan Africa. How do you see Nigeria?
Nigeria has a low level of external debt to GDP. They're not heavy borrowers, but they are committed to paying, you know, relatively large interest payments for a large percentage of their foreign earnings, which is, you know, so let's call it a debt moratorium on that might be quite useful to Nigeria. But, I mean, it may be that Nigeria uses this opportunity to diversify the economy differently to deliver in different ways. I mean, I don't really want to advise the government of Nigeria at this moment. Yeah. But, they have reasonable reserves. They have a very industrious people. I mean, a good banking system, professionally run central bank, a very effective finance minister now. And this may be with obviously the right support. They're not a country that, you know, the IMF would be providing emergency funding to necessarily, conventionally anyway, because they're not under an IMF program. And I think they can come out of this. It's going to be tight to them. I mean, we're looking to ways of providing liquidity into the banking sector. We're looking, you know, potentially to the government, but that will probably be alongside, you know, DFIs, etc. But I think they'll come out of this, and they'll come out of this reasonably well. But it really depends on how the government manages it.
Yes, I think going to the diversification is something which, again, the African Union are talking about, particularly in relation to the relationship with China and Africa, is, and China and the rest of the world, in terms of sourcing your, if your supply chain is wholly dependent on China, then the opportunity to dual source or diversify your supply chain and put production into the relatively youthful Africa, it appears to be quite an attractive prospect if the money is there to pay for that rather than just health, I guess.
Yeah, I'd agree. And again, what are you paying for in health at the moment? I don't know. I mean, obviously, there's a requirement to provide protective sort of face masks, etc., all sorts of things like that. But I mean, you're not going to plough an enormous amount of money into sub-Saharan Africa and suddenly build a whole bunch of hospitals and emergency units, are you? I mean, it's just one, it's just not feasible. I mean, it's not about the money, really. It's about actually doing it. So I think the debt moratorium, which enables those countries to, at a time when they just don't have the hard currency revenues and they're just not going to have them for a while, that is a sensible solution, can be a sensible solution if it's properly managed.
You're based in the UK. How do you see, you were at the UK Africa Investment Summit, I think. So how do you see the UK's position now? Do you think they're going to be stuck worrying about COVID themselves, or do you think there's an opportunity or an intention to look out to Africa a bit more?
Well, I think we're pretty well set up in the UK in terms of what we give in foreign aid. It's becoming, I think, better focused anyway in the way it's going in. You know, whether it's sort of providing support through trade finance, export finance, et cetera, or whether it's actually eventually providing some form of credit guarantees. So I think the UK will continue to do that. I mean, you know, the UK is going to be spending a lot of money as I'm managing this. I mean, but I think in a relative sense, I mean, the UK government has shown that they feel a sense of responsibility and actually want to support. And I'm fairly certain you've had those conversations with there's discussion about various instruments being put together with CDC and another bank and so on and other banks, debt funds, et cetera, et cetera. I think these sort of things, if delivered relatively quickly, and that's the other issue, they need to be delivered relatively quickly, I think, can be very supportive to rebuilding or enabling bits of sub-Saharan African economies to bounce back as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and I guess the DFI, the role of the DFIs and multilaterals has never been more relevant, and so never, I guess never. they need to show that they can step up, I guess.
Yeah, and we, you know, as a bank, we want to support that. I mean, we've worked well with others. I mean, we did the large financing for Kokobot and Ghana, which is African Development Bank. Those type of things, we financed or have been involved leading the financing for Bank of Industry in Nigeria. Those type of, we want to do those type of things anyway. And actually now, I think pretty much most of what we'll be doing is working alongside one of the main sort of organizations, like, you know, it could be IMF, it could be African Development Bank, it could be African Bank, it could be, you know, it could be the UK, it could be UK DFID, it could be CDC, it could be... I think that's the way, you know, commercial money comes in alongside and plugs the gap alongside. You can, there's a multiplier effect by using guarantees anyway from other organizations.
There's an opportunity, I think, for that to be ratcheted up, I think, or to use the argot, the ramped up, you might say, is what people are talking about at the moment, isn't it? But ramping up the sort of opportunities DFIs to work with the private sector, as it were, seems a good thing.
And those conversations are happening. I mean, you know, half of my calls are about that.
So what are the key messages you from Credit Suisse would have on the Africa market in the current context?
I think where we can, we're there to support. I mean, my life is about sub-Saharan Africa in that sense. I mean, that's where I do my business, and I feel that, you know, sub-Saharan Africa is going to suffer through no fault of their own from something which has come to them, in a sense. But I think with the right level of support, and it's not charitable, it's actually, you know, we need to be doing it. You know, we need to be enabling those economies to bounce back. So again, there's no doubt the economies are going to suffer, and they are already.
Yes.
But they can bounce back from it. And as I said, you know, the base is slightly lower anyway, in a sense, to bounce back from it. So I'm pretty optimistic, but speed is important now.
Ed Marlowe, head of Sub-Saharan Africa coverage and sales at global wealth manager and investment bank Credit Suisse. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time on the A Perspective. Thank you, Ed.
Thank you very much, Andrew.